tomorrow is the day we let our hair down and we are going to have Dear Bumi, and I'm bringing an erotic specialist, a sex counselor, our own Uzo here from Wazobia. She runs her program at night when all the children are sleeping, from 12 till about 4 or so. Okay, so she'll be here tomorrow and we'll be discussing Dear Bumi, but I don't want to waste time because my friend is here. Mr. Yemi Andy Johnson, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Morning, his mic. Let them hear your voice again.
Good morning, sir. It's a pleasure, as always.
Mr. Yemi is difficult to catch. He's become an artful dodger. But I know the times, you know, you do get tired of public speaking sometimes, especially when you see that when you're speaking from a position of truth, and you see a complete lack of appreciation from the generality. I'm getting to that point too. You know, you just don't feel up to it. But I know how to catch you. Since seven, when you're in the bath, and Madame can say, "Yemi, your friend is on the line." No,
you're very good at catching me.
Good at catching you. So how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
The first reason why I wanted you to come in, of course, is to. I always say that talking to you is like a lecture for Ogberis like us who don't know anything about law. To give us an insight into the Appeal Court Wahala that we have now in Kano and to take us through the perspectives. But most importantly, to show us or to give us an idea of what, now that we are in the situation that we are in now, what do we do next? Your fellow, Silk. So we hear from his chambers, believes that we should be headed for the Supreme Court. So, but just give us an idea of what you think is going on and what we should be doing next.
Okay, well, the controversy you refer to is the controversy over
the Kano election.
The Kano gubernatorial election petition. And it's interesting from many perspectives, I think. For the direct partisans, the result of the judgment is of interest. Personally, I have no interest in whatever way the judgment goes. But as a practitioner of law and as one who takes a direct interest in the intervention of legal resources in social, political, and economic situations, I worry at the quality of the judgment above all. You know, there is some controversy has centered around the question of whether the judges were corrupted in that case. And some will believe that whatever you say. I think that for corruption, that case may not be the smoking gun because it appears from the judgment that there was a high degree of confusion in its delivery and that this confusion and contradiction is what we're seeing manifested in the doubt that is being placed upon the judgment. But more important to my view than the possibility of corruption is what is definitely proved by this case. It is a high degree of incompetence and negligence in the administration of justice. Even if you wanted to deliver a corrupt judgment, the skill and experience that is required of a justice of the Court of Appeal, the administrative competence that is required of the registry and of the basic infrastructure or substructure of justice administration in Nigeria has been shown to be lacking. And this is not unusual. The fact is that in many respects, many lawyers on their feet before the Supreme Court of Nigeria have been confronted with the utter incompetence of judicial administration behind the courts. As I said, when you're talking about judges, people tend to speculate about whether they've been corrupted in their task. That is one aspect. But the key aspect for me is And I can't stress this strongly enough, the utter incompetence in judicial administration in Nigeria. In many courts, you can't get documents out, you can't fix dates. Indeed, someone was discussing with me recently an experience I had myself, where a senior advocate was asked to be sure that he went to the registry to confirm that his papers were before the court 3 years before the case arose. And he asked them, "Do I work for your registry?" I have posed a similar question on my feet before to the court. Why do you expect me to be responsible for your performance of your work? It's your job. When I go to court, my juniors prepare a list of the issues, they prepare the documents, they serially identify them, they tab them, they paginate them in an index, and they tell me exactly what I'm going to do in court. Why on earth should I be paying for a high justice administration that can't achieve that minimum level of competence? And that's the situation. So I think that this case, rather than who wins the Kanuguba election, is of no interest to me.
Yeah.
I doubt that this case shows corruption in the judgment, because it seems that the consistency to the result is eventually possible to extract. But what it shows above all is negligence and incompetence and a failure of administration in that court.
Well, when you talk about administration of the court, let's take this incident in isolation. Mm. So when the judge prepares his judgment, does he pass it to the registrar to tidy up, or you know, who then produces the judgment? Is it the judge or the registrar's? Yeah.
There are many ways that this works, and not just in Nigeria, but in various parts of the country. So, for example, in the United States Supreme Court, every judge has a number of clerks. The highest minds in coming out of university are assisting with research, with preparation, with proposing of drafts to the judge. So it's the judge's decision, but the material upon which he bases his judgment would have to be gathered from a number of sources. I believe that in our Supreme Court, the judges have judicial assistants, they're called, even the High Court of Lagos, judicial assistants, which assist them with doing research and organizing their thinking. And it's quite possible that such individuals may present a draft to the judge. In some of these cases, the judge may feel that this issue is so sensitive and early disclosure may be so dangerous that he ought to do all the writing himself. Now, this is not a big thing. I mean, speaking for myself, I write arbitration awards with some frequency. It's important that you keep your work product secret. And so for me, I would write an award, and sometimes I may read it 15 to 20 times before it's ready to go out, because it has to be word perfect.
Yes.
The consistency of your reasoning has to be clear, and it must lead to one conclusion. You must be clear that you have considered every possible argument, you have balanced them, and you have weighed the facts, and you've made a decision. The rationality of a decision on its face, its consistency, is what gives it strength. You know, judges seem to think that there's something important about their fancy dress and their honorable titles. This is irrelevant. Mm. What is relevant is the confidence that the public have in the judicial product. At the end of the day, everybody must be able to say, I've read that judgment, it's a fair conclusion. You know, I listened to an English judge many years ago, I think it was Justice McGarry, who was asked, who is the most important person in the court? And someone said, the judge, he said no. Said the QC, no. The registrar, he said no. He said, the most important person in the court is the losing party.
Hmm.
Because the losing party has to leave the court satisfied that he has been fairly heard and that there is a rational basis for the conclusion reached against him. Perversion of mind is often reflected in perversion of expression. And if a judge is unclear in his mind, or if he's clear and he wishes to corrupt a decision, you will often find inconsistency. You know, I tell people also that when someone is being cross-examined, if a witness appears to be cross-examined by me, I know that if I'm patient to take him carefully through what he said before, what he said in court, and the logicality of his testimony against documents that exist, that it's very often easy to find lies. So it's not that easy to tell lies if someone's going to say, okay, have you finished your story? This is why when police are doing investigation in advanced countries, they will come and they will interview you. And when they interview you, they will go away. And they'll come back the next day having investigated your story and said, now, can you go over your story again? Well, I told you the story again yesterday. They're looking for internal inconsistency. And they're looking for points upon which the flow of your testimony will fail.
Okay, do you think that there could have been sabotage? You know, what I'm saying so is that maybe the judge was sabotaged. I don't know. I'm just trying to look at all the possibilities.
Anything is possible.
I
spoke with a judge recently who gave a decision which appeared to have been a mistake. And she attributed it to, and I believe that, to the secretary typist in the office.
Wow.
Indeed, in that case, she said, well, she produced her actual written judgment to the parties, which was very clear. But the printed copy was not clear.
But not clear.
But anybody who didn't see her written judgment would assume there was something funny going on, as they say in the song. And, you know, suspicion is very easy to generate. But I think that before reaching final conclusions, it's important to consider the variety and the range of possibilities. So sometimes the simplest explanation is the truth. I was telling someone again the other day that not everything that goes bump in the night is a ghost.
It's a ghost, yes.
So let us assume...
But it's treated as a ghost, though.
Of course, you must be alert.
Yeah.
You must say, well, that could be, but then you then investigate. You put on the lights, you look out the window, and you say, well, okay, it can't be.
I like that phrase. Okay, so where do we go now for resolution? According to the law, not necessarily a doctrine of necessity.
No. Well, you know, ordinarily, if a court makes a mistake, which is called a slip, which is a typographical, structural, grammatical error, which results in the judgment not reflecting the intention of the court, there is jurisprudence that allows that to be corrected very quickly. That faces two difficulties in this case. One is that in an election case, the jurisdiction of a court is limited by time. And so it may not be possible for the court to review outside the time that's been given to it. So that is one impediment. The second impediment is that an application would have to be brought to the court, and the court would have to reach the decision that what has occurred is actually a slip. So, for example, if the entire reasoning says Jimmy Disu is the winner of a case, and at the end of the day, I say Bob Jones is the winner, then the judgment would be, it would be clear that my intention has been erroneously stated in my conclusion, and that is a slip. But if the inconsistencies are more extreme, then it would require a higher court to correct it and determine what had been decided.
Is this one a slip?
Mm-hmm. I haven't studied the judgment. This is the first thing I should say. But if the anecdotes that are in wide circulation are that reference was made to one party when another party was intended, it could be a slip. I read a, as usual, brilliant analysis this morning by Kepa Braithwaite in This Day Law. She is herself a very distinguished lawyer, not merely a legal editor. And she was analyzing what had gone on. And her conclusion was that this was not a slip. But her, really? Well, that it was for sure, the clearest conclusion she reached, in my understanding of her reasoning, is that what needs to be inquired into is the incompetence on display and the quality of judges who are sent to high positions in our courts. The fact of the matter is that it's not too harsh to say, and I regret saying this because some of the judges in our highest courts are of the highest standard. We have judges in our high courts who, and high courts and the Court of Appeal and the Supreme Court, who would stand toe-to-toe with a judge anywhere in the world. But in invariably, those judges will not become the heads of those courts.
No, they don't.
I think generally, debris rises quicker than anything else in a pond. And so very often you find that judges with high ability who focus on their work and who are getting on with it don't have the time for the brown nosing and politicking that is required to ascend high in the courts. In my opinion, it is exceptional, and there are heads of courts who I have the highest respect for. But it would be fair to say that generally, if someone calls himself a head of court, actually, some years ago, I was listening to the head of a court in Nigeria on the TV, and the person sitting next to me said, "Who is that man?" I said, "He's the head of a court." Hmm. And she said, "You mean he's actually a judge?"
Wow.
Because she found it difficult to believe that the person speaking could have been appointed a judge at all. And this is a problem.
Mm.
But this controversy is more important for one reason, that the public is discussing the level of competence and the creation of the work product of judges, because it is a matter that is important to every member of us on the street. Judges' decisions are not for lawyers alone. English judges will say that you should make it right so that he who runs can read. Anybody ought to be able to pick up a judgment and say, I can see what it means. So some lawyers who take delight in endlessly quoting arcane sections, quoting Latin, this is a form of dissimulation, an attempt to deflect from what they don't know. The more simple a lawyer speaks, the more I have confidence in his knowledge.
Yes. In spiritum, this.
There you go.
You know, I did Latin in school, though.
That shows that your mind is well developed.
For where? From 1 to 3, I got 0. You know, and we had a teacher, a Latin teacher, who was a man called Papo Okon. So when he puts the 0, so that you don't go and put a 7 in front of it or whatever, he draws ears and whatever. For 3 years, I think the only classmate of mine who got any mark in Latin must have been Dayo Banjo.
Wow.
Who I'm sure can't speak a word of Latin today. I don't know how that came into the curriculum, Latin.
Yeah.
And there was this argument that, oh, if you speak Latin, you speak very good English.
Yeah,
so me will get 0 that I speak very good English.
And people use big words to hide a weakness of knowledge.
Another Obahiagbo, whatever that gentleman's name is.
I think that's just an entertainer.
It's an entertainer, yes. 9:20. Okay, so what we will do now is we'll take one or two calls, okay? 0700-993-993-993. And 01, the lines are not working? Sorry, you're not sure. Okay, you can try 0700-993-993-993. And I think we'll open up our female lines to you if we can get the other lines, 01465-7190. And you know the rules will apply. Today is the serious day. Tomorrow is the day of Jaguajanti, so we can say anything we like. But today we have a serious matter on our hands. It's 9:20. So we still haven't gotten to the point where for you to tell us what should be done next.
Okay.
Yes, you know, what do we need to do next?
Well, this decision is under appeal. The theory of an appeal to a higher court is that it is a rehearing. Which means, effectively, that every issue that was canvassed in the lower court and every issue that was expressed upon by the lower court will be looked into by the High Court. So it may be one ground of appeal, if you like, that there's inconsistency in the judgment and it's not possible to determine.
That means they have to appeal to the Supreme Court.
Indeed,
now.
Indeed. That of course, is a problem. I don't really support the idea of multiple appeals from an election petition. Election petition is a political matter and it should be determined once and for all, in my opinion. This is how it was done before the 1860s in the UK. Election petitions were decided by Parliament, not by judges.
Oh, I see.
It's a political matter. They gave judges that role, and it's damaging. But of course, in England, in the last 100, I think the last successful election petition in the UK was 1967. So in 150 years, there's hardly any election petitions.
Do you think we'll ever get to that point?
I think we can. I think that the election jurisprudence needs to be codified. We need to exclude things that are irrelevant to the will of the people. The fundamental purpose of an election is to determine by numbers the will of the people.
Yeah.
If someone is a thief and he kept it as a secret, if the people vote and their decision is clear and you can determine it on numbers, this should be paramount, because sustaining the idea of democracy is something that we have decided is better for our society. And it's important for people to have confidence that if you get the numbers right, you win an election. I really think it's a problem in Nigeria that the impression is widely circulated that, indeed, in a scholarly paper, it was put this way, that some people say, you know, forget about the election, I'm going to win it with the judges.
With judges, yes. Yes, I think somebody said as much. And this view you're expressing is what attracted me to you about 10 years ago or so. I think you were somewhere in France and you were talking to Channel.
probably in Togo. Probably
no,
in Togo,
you are not in Togo.
Or Benin Republic.
We saw the background. Okay, pick that call. Hello, good morning. Hello, morning.
Good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Morning.
Maromita is my name.
Yes.
Respect to the noble man on the seat there. He's been very, very noble. Very good language.
You have 1 minute, please, because we're being timed here now.
Yes,
so
very
quick.
Gentle with us.
Yes.
Well, my opinion is the fact that our judges refuse to be noble. They did the judgment on their own. Then somebody crossed us and rewrite a new judgment, not going back. Talking about administration.
Okay, sir. So your point has been made. You will be cut off abruptly. Yeah, thank you, because the address is automated. We'll take a short break and then we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Daily Digest, and I still have Yemi Candy Johnson, S-A-N, here. Is it Mr. Chief or Honorable? I just want to be sure that all the titles
Ordinary are Mr.
Ordinary Mr. Maybe you should get a doctorate, honorary doctorate.
I think they cost like $5,000. So if I save up, I might buy one from some unknown university in America. That's quite popular in Nigeria.
Yes. And then Carnival follows. It's gotten to us there. By the way, congrats to Tompolo. He got a doctorate from one of the universities.
It's overdue, I suspect.
It's overdue, yes. Okay, so let's get back to business. A quick stop. You know, we're going to what the CJ said yesterday, but I just want to quickly make a quick detour to Ondo State, your fellow son. I don't know if you've been following what's going on and what your views are on the current development.
I have. I know he's your friend and that you care for him.
I care for him.
I do
the same for you.
And I understand that he's not well. And I wish him the best in his treatment and recovery. But I think the question you ask relates to the constitutional and political crisis which was provoked by his incapacity.
Well, more political than... Well, constitutional, yes. Okay, yeah. So go on.
Well, as a constitutional
matter... Because lawyers are very cold.
Sure, as a constitutional matter, if the governor is incapable, his deputy governor ought to assume the office of governor. This is simple enough.
Yes.
I think that what you find in Ondo State is that the political struggle behind the law is one that is driven by personal interests and not by constitutional imperatives. And I think it's likely, as there are many historic examples, and if history is anything to go by, it is likely that the incapacity of the governor, which seems to be apparent to most people, is being exploited by those who wish to continue to benefit from the trappings of his power.
Yeah. Well, we don't even know whether he's in a position to actually take a decision himself.
If he was, I believe he would have been seen by now. We would have seen him in public. This is the test. If everybody thinks that something is wrong, what should you just show yourself? I think the fact that he's been unable to show himself, and the fact that even in a most critical meeting about the political future of his state, he could not be in Abuja. Indicates certainly, as you had spoken, as a friend, you already advised that. His health and his personal well-being is more important than the illusion of office, which some people wish to hold on to.
Or which some people...
wish to exploit.
Those around him wish to exploit.
Right.
I wish him all the best. I wish he'd just be left alone, and find time to recover. If what I hear about his illness is anything to go by, he doesn't need to be... in fact, he should be close to his doctor as we speak, and his doctor is not even in this country.
Of course, the last 24 hours, his own commentary when President Yar'Adua was ill is coming to circulation. He had given the advice which he should take himself, I think. And I wish him the best.
Well, we keep watching the development. The president intervened. I think he intervened in his capacity as a head of the party. Because most of the decisions that were taken there were not necessarily constitutional. And I thought, maybe I'm just somebody who is sometimes more emotional than, facing certain realities. I had thought that the president himself would have told him. But apparently, like I said this morning, it appears the president might have his own candidate. You know the elections next year.
Oh, is that so?
So if the deputy is sworn in now, okay, and governors are very powerful. If the deputy is sworn in now, there's a 70 to 80% chance that deputy will become the governor.
Yes, there are multiple calculations. Issue. So I don't know what the calculations are, but...
But you see, the painful part is that a man's life is hanging in the balance. I believe if Akiti was out of office, maybe his health would probably have improved considerably. How are you sick and all these things, you hear about them every day, And each time you say, give me a pen, I want to, somebody say, no, I'm out for the pen. Mm. Yeah, just take this and sleep small, put him to sleep and then.
Yes, this is what you describe is exactly the sort of incapacity which the Constitution was designed to protect against.
Hmm.
But it's clear that it's people who operate any constitution, it's people who operate the law, and there are many ways to subvert its intention. So, but then it just seems to me that in the circumstance where the chief executive of a state is inaccessible to the public, he cannot be seen, the credibility is given to rumors that he's facing very serious incapacitating illness. Mm. In those circumstances, of course, many of the devices that would ensure continuity in government are already failing because the House of Assembly has failed, the judiciary has failed. And it then comes to the politicians to resolve a problem which is of their own creation, because all the levers of constitutional power have been, how shall I say?
But does it bother you that as a people, especially at the political level, we don't seem to have respect for the rule of law? You know, rather we're up to, honor is missing at all levels. I'm not saying in all cases,
yes,
but honor is missing. The idea for you to say to yourself, oh, I'm sorry, I can't, that's like the way we were brought up.
Mm.
Don't steal, don't do this. Mm. All this have been thrown to the wind. Mm.
And it's not just in our political institutions, in day-to-day affairs, I see, yes, these things. I was saying the other day that when you find in a private members club, committee members are stealing, and that sort of thing just shows that we have mixed with the wrong people. The basic honor and integrity is venerated for a reason, because it is fundamental to the continuity of organized society. That is why, you know, you don't do anything if there's no reason. If you, it may benefit you to take somebody's money. It may benefit me to put my hand in your pocket and snatch your money and walk away and dare you to knock me down. But I don't do it because the order that we both rely on will be undermined by that action. So therefore, if I took your wallet, the next man could take the wallet from me. So it is out of self-protection that we create these rules. We create these rules, and respect for these rules is fundamental to the stability and the continuity of society. So this is the issue. And I think that sometimes Nigerian history is very short as a nation, because we tend to panic over things that happen over 8 years, 3 years. In the long-term history of humanity, 10 years is nothing.
Mm.
But when we're living it, we tend to panic about things we see going on around here.
It just worries me that
we will learn many of these lessons.
Yes.
We may learn these lessons sometimes silently and we not express them. So in 20 years' time or 50 years' time, we say, Nigerians are very clear about driving on one side of the road. It may be because of some catastrophe. So, you know, you train people. The English common law is based on a natural respect for rules and for law. But that came about with a great degree of violence operated by those in power.
Yes.
This is just a fact.
Off with his head.
Sure. The fact is, if 10 people's heads are off because they break the law, the remaining 2,000 are likely to not break the law.
Not break the law. It will take a while, maybe longer after we are gone.
Some heads will have to be broken.
Some heads have to be broken. The CJ of the Federation says that we can't replace law with emotions, but neither can we replace emotions with strictly law. I'm adding that to it. You can't replace law with emotions, but neither can we replace emotions. Well, I don't believe, sorry, I'm talking to a son now, that's a difficult one. When I hear lawyers argue, sometimes I get very, very angry, because the human element is sometimes missing. When you, all these election petitions, when you look at the way the reason is good, we solve these things, you know, and it makes life very, very frustrating. But let's go back to what the CJN said. Part of what is reported here, that he said, was that judges won't be afraid of intimidation with independence. He scores the judiciary high. Or highly, but that's the highest word. He adds that rule of law in Nigeria, questionable since 1999, the CJ said that, discloses NJC is ready to receive petitions against election tribunal judges. What does that statement say? Weren't they ready before? You know? And then he swears in 58 new sons. So that role in the court is getting fuller and fuller by the day. And he taxes them on professionalism and integrity. And I wonder what example has been laid for them at that upper limit. So I'd like you to say these things. And then, politics now comes in. CJ's confession of external influence is troubling. And societies fail when public confidence in judiciary fails. So in a short 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, can you make any reference to what the CJ said?
The Chief Justice's speech yesterday reminds me of Emperor Nero, who they said was twiddling while Rome burnt. It's full of self-congratulatory platitudes. It's full of misdirection. It's full of, frankly, delusional appreciation of the position of the judiciary in the public perception today. I think that the credibility of judges and the judicial system is fundamental to their effectiveness. Judging is fundamental to the safety of our society because it's a device for regulating disputes, for regulating human behavior. It can only do so not by force, but by the authority and the compulsion that is in its reasoning and the confidence in those who administer justice. If confidence in those who administer justice evaporates, the justice device becomes entirely unfit for purpose. This is a fundamental danger which the Chief Justice apparently has not appreciated. In the last week, we have this Kano controversy. We have several cases where dubious decisions have been given, where sometimes the democratic will has been thwarted. We had the bizarre spectacle of the Chief Judge of the Federal Court Territory verbally genuflecting before the Minister of the Federal Capital Territory. Many people who have asked me about that have been sickened by that display, and this includes sitting judges. I talked to some of my friends who are judges, say they won't go in public with a policeman because they don't want people to know that they're judges.
It's getting that bad.
Another one of my friends who's a judge said he only thanks God that his friends know who he is, because many of our judges are men of high honor, high ability, and who wish to preserve the sanctity of the office and its function in society. But the role model for this ambition are the heads of courts, most above all, the Chief Justice of Nigeria. I think that the Chief Justice's speech was disappointing, and it does nothing to restore credibility to the judicial product. So I'm afraid, if I was a judge, I would be afraid that they're congratulating themselves when everyone can see this fire around.
What would you have wanted to hear from him, given the current crisis we're in?
I'd have wanted him to say that the reputation of the judiciary, by all public accounts, has fallen below that which is expected, that it is his responsibility as Chief Justice to intervene to protect that, that there are many instances that have occurred in the last few days, and that there are mechanisms within the judicial administration to deal with them. I would have rebuked a judge who went to bar before the minister.
That was disgraceful.
Sure, I would have. And certainly, in my experience in Lagos, judges who have fallen in that way have been roundly disgraced in public. There's a famous case of Justice Fama Kinwa, who they then began to call the bowing judge because of a picture on the Punch newspaper showing him bowing almost double. Because this posture of obsequiousness is one that not only does it threaten the credibility of the decision-making process, but it destroys confidence of the public that a judge can be impartial.
Yeah.
If you don't have confidence that the judge can be independent and impartial, there's no need for judges.
I mean, what happened in Abuja was almost horrific.
Yes.
Because, you see, what I get from that is that if I had any case with the Federal Capital, whatever, I've lost.
Yes.
I mean, you're assuring him that you... I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that sort of outburst questions the fitness of that person for judicial office. Really.
Well, but the FCT minister himself is a senior lawyer.
And his wife is a judge.
And his wife is a judge.
And I believe that he reveres that institution. I really do.
So why would he have... why did he take him in? What was the essence of the meeting?
Well, if the chief judge says he wants to visit you...
And show his loyalty.
Yes. When my father retired as chief judge,
yes,
he had never, in that case, the new governor, I think, was 9 months. He had never met him once. But then when I was in Kano, the chief judge used to go to the airport in full robes to receive the governor arriving from an out-of-state visit.
Yeah, my will. Okay, let's pick that call. Hello, good morning. Hello, morning.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
Okay, my name is Joy.
Yes,
Joy. Good morning to the noble man in the studio.
Yes.
For me, judiciary has actually lost it here. I don't have confidence in their judgment anymore. With these recent rulings that we've gotten, I truly do not have any confidence in them anymore. Redeeming their face. Mm. I think the way to which the judges are being appointed and those at the bench is actually very questionable.
Yeah.
If that is not checked, I don't think we can get anywhere. Like what the man said, the judge said the most important person in the court is the person who lost the court, who lost the suit. And if they see the person who lost the suit is saying, yes, with all I have seen, I think it is fair and square. But what we're saying, I don't think we can be redeemed if nothing is changed. Thank you.
Okay. Very much for having me. Yeah, also here you have in the papers, the Cardoso, the CBN governor, says judicial decisions can affect FDI, foreign direct investment.
Of course.
People want to see that you're well organized and there's an allowance for justice, dispensation of justice.
You know, disputes are inevitable, especially in commercial transactions.
Yes.
And every seat of commerce is tested on a number of grounds. One of those is the effectiveness of dispute resolution. If we have a disagreement in a construction contract, how quickly can I get a resolution that allows us to go ahead with the business? And you lose some, you win some. But if you have one of the biggest impediments as far as judiciary is concerned is the inordinate delay in determining disputes in this territory and the excessive obsession with technicality rather than the merits of the law.
Yeah, okay, so I didn't want to put it that way, that was what I meant when I rolled the CJ's, when it says we can't replace law with emotions. Surely the law should have a human face.
There's no doubt about that. The reason why we give judicial decisions to human beings is that we expect them to be able to see and hear. The fact of the matter is that it would be exceptional to find a law so inflexible that it cannot be used to achieve justice. And in our countries, if injustice is produced, the legislature would intervene or the higher courts would find a way to mitigate. The purpose of the device is to, as I say, continuity and safety of society. If what you're producing is decisions that are so manifestly unjust that nobody is going to embrace them, then you've failed. So you can't escape by saying, you can't use the law and arcane technicality as a defense for your failure to do justice. But in Nigeria, across the board, what is more dangerous is the fact that the judges don't recognize that your primary task is to decide the substantive merits of a dispute, not to deflect from it by relevant points. You'll find judges who say, oh, we can't take this point because you missed one letter out, or it was in the wrong court, or you didn't write this. Nobody cares about your fanciful ideas of law. People care about the effect and the substance. And I think they don't get it. I don't know whether, for some judges, wearing the dramatic gown deludes them into thinking that they're not human.
Yeah. Okay, we can take, I think we can take just about one more. I could talk to this gentleman until 12 if I had the time. Hello, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Yes.
My Attorney General, good morning, sir.
Morning, how are
Attorney
you?
General, okay.
Perfectly. Uncle Jimmy, with the double D politics we play in Nigeria,
Yes.
It will take a long time, like my attorney general said. If this man is a head of Supreme Court or CJN, you take your case to the court. You that lose, self, you will jubilate now. You hear him. You see all the explanation my attorney general have been giving? Yoruba Soma Sheu. How did we find ourselves in this stormy water?
All right, thank
so
you.
So I want to say thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you. A part thank of correction is not, an attorney general. Neither does he want to. Neither does he aspire to be one. If he wanted to be an attorney general, that would have happened about 10, 15 years ago.
I just want to go to the golf course. That's what I want to do now.
I fall down the staircase.
Hello. Good morning, sir. Uncle Jimmy and the gentleman in the studio. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
My name is Mrs. Oboli.
Yes, we know.
Sir, I want to strongly commend your efforts for stating things exactly the way they are.
Yes.
These last 3 days, my head has been going haywire. I have heard so many English, clerical error, typographical error. God, when I was in school, I know what they told us a typographical error is. How can you say a 2 or 3 page paper that has been certified is a typographical error? What do I tell my kids, even when they hear these things? God will bless you, sir.
Amen.
I just want to ask a question, please. For all these people that are defending this injustice, all in the name of justice,
yes,
how do you respond to them? Thanks and God bless.
Well, you it took 2 minutes, but we'll give you a minute because we've got to go.
Oh, how to respond? We continue to take an interest. We continue,
yes,
to criticize,
yes,
investigate, analyze,
yes. Yes.
And bring common sense to the justice system.
Okay, we got to go, Yemi. Thank you very much. I could talk to him till 12 noon. This is a wonderful country where the latest we've heard, they come and see, I read this song when we were young, come and see American Wonder. I wonder what it was then. But this country is full of all kinds of things. You board the flights, you want to go to Abuja. and the pilot says, welcome to Nnamdi Azikiwe Airport in Abuja.
It's a kind of magic.
And you're way down, I see you in Asap. No, I'm going to get somebody to come and talk about that aspect. Okay, so we'll be back again tomorrow. Your famous Uzo will be on the seat, you know, to do the Ebumi with me. And so something to look forward to. Thank you very much, Yemi Kanti Johnson, SAN. You must always add that SAN.
Five. 99.3 Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.